Hey everyone, this is Box and Casey, and we are going to do a debrief of the Hit Record on Your Radio extravaganza season that we just did, right?
Right. We're going to talk about what was good and what was bad and just get an overall impression on what we did and what you guys did and what we all did together.
I guess we'll just get right into it. We're going to go through a questionnaire that that Casey had put together. And then we'll kind of go into a little bit more about the process and what we learned. And we definitely encourage people to, you know, comment on this or to make their own piece in a way that they think is helpful if they want to keep the podcast talk going as far as Hit Record on the Radio or future podcast endeavors.
Yeah, future podcast endeavors. This doesn't have to all be pertaining to Hit Record on your radio. It's just audio on the site at large. Audio storytelling.
That's right. Okay, first question we're going to go through is, what was your favorite segment and why? My favorite segment, I think, was in the last episode. It was the piece interviewing Liana, who goes by Lottie on the site. I liked it because, well, being someone who was immersed in the process, it was something that felt like a culmination. I think the more, you know, journalistic styled pieces, the pieces where we had someone sharing something, some of their personal story or an in-depth opinion on something that they were very familiar with, like Ghost Beard did with guns. This felt like a really nice culmination of that, and it was based on a text record that she had released on the site, so it wasn't forced. It was a very natural and organic extension of that. I think it was such a great taste of things to come, and a great way to include all sorts of artists, you know, like visual artists. Liana is a visual artist, but she definitely has things to say. I mean, she has a life, and she shared a lot about her unique story. So yeah, that was one of my favorite segments. I thought that was great. Casey?
Cool. I think that I kind of have two, but one of them was the League on the Secrets episode. That one, in the same way that you were saying, it's kind of like a culmination of a lot of different parts. I felt like that one had so much, you know, it was based off of a visual sort of script record that I just kind of simplified for audio. And then we had such good vocal performances from Alyssa Zarkowski and Tim Sterner. And it was just, I think it was just kind of a learning process for all of us. And Tim did some retakes on things. It really just came together really well with Tenderlocks producing that piece and all the different sound effects. And I think that was kind of later on in the season. And so we were sort of able to embrace all these things that we'd learned in the process before about sort of introducing silences and when it's good to have no background noise and when it's good to have some background noise and how to really make the audience feel like they're in that piece. I think that we learned a lot in that process, and I felt really good. And I think we all felt really good about how that piece felt. You felt really immersed in it for the length of a piece like that. It didn't feel as long as it was, which I think is a big thing. Another one that I liked, which was a little bit more, I don't want to say like smaller, but I guess a little bit more intimate, which was Two Four Squares poem on the Guns episode. Oh, yeah. I thought that was just, you know, it was one of those pieces that I don't think there was any collaboration to it. It was from beginning to end. Amber had this idea of doing sort of like an onomatopoeia poem. And then she's like, oh, I'll just do it. And then she did it, and she put it up for people to read, and she did an example of what she thought it should sound like, and her example was just absolutely stunning. And so, Evan, you added some sounds and music to it, and we did a little bit of production, but I thought that was one of those ones that just kind of comes in, and it's basically just like, it can't really get any better than that. So very two opposite ends of the spectrum of something that was kind of like done when it started, and then the leak, which was a lot of different layers.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the next one. It's what was your favorite episode and why? This one, it's a really hard question to answer. I like the flow of the first one quite a bit. I think if I listen back to that one, everything kind of feels in the right place as far as the sequencing. You know, I think there was a lot of things that we got better at And I also think when I listen to the first one, I can hear the freshness in the approach, and so it's nice for me to listen to that one. But yeah, I'll leave it at that. So what do you think your favorite episode was, Casey?
That's interesting that you said the freshness, because I wonder if that kind of comes from having sort of no, we weren't going by anything. Like we didn't have to, you know, with each episode, we felt like we had to outdo the last episode. So we sort of, you know, you just go like, all right, like here's all the stuff and
Yeah.
here's what we did. And then
And
from
we
then on, we
developed a
kind of felt,
format too,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
Do you think that has to do too, though? Like we kind of had a different tone for each episode. Do you think that tone spoke more to you, like personally,
The
in
tone of
any
the
way?
first one? Is that
Yeah.
I just yeah, I like the vibe of the first one a lot, and I love them all, so that's why I'm not gonna spend too much time on this question because they're all cool.
Yeah, I agree. I think I think we did best at something in each episode, like collectively as a community. Like there was like, you know, something that we all kind of came to a conclusion about. But I think for me, my favorite was Guns. That one was mostly because of how much pressure we felt to kind of get that one right. It was really, really difficult. And maybe that's why. And it was a totally different approach than the other ones. You know, there was it was completely sort of docu style. There wasn't any or at all or like fiction at all, I don't think. And I just felt like that was kind of a fun, interesting approach to storytelling. And I think we learned a lot in that episode that we took forward in the rest of the episodes. And we kind of tackled the journalistic side of things, which we hadn't really, really, really dove into quite yet. And I think we really took that forward with the rest of the episodes. And it kind of made all the rest of them, it makes it feel a little bit more full when you have that sort of personal storytelling element. And since that's all the Guns episode really was, that was interesting. I think that, you know, good art comes from feeling uncomfortable. And Guns is an uncomfortable thing to talk about. And it was really interesting and kind of eye-opening to try and include all perspectives and really get a sense of everyone's opinions of it.
Okay, so moving on to the third one here. What was your least favorite segment and why? How would you have made it better? So there's some things that were cut or they were shortened in ways that made them not make as much sense as they originally were written for, because of the format. I don't know if we always made the right decision there, because it's kind of giving a fractured view of someone's. I think editing is crucial, and I think we learned that. But I also think, some people were confused about why we included certain things. With Almost Sounds piece in the number two,
And number two.
yeah, there was, while I like it, it's not quite as tethered to the theme because there was a second part to it that we just didn't include for time.
And if you guys didn't hear it, it's Almost Sound comes in and he talks about his first time going to a strip club. And our, can you talk about what the, so he comes in, he talks to us, the host, about his first time at a strip club, and we're kind of like, well, what's the deal? Like, you know, you're supposed to be talking about your second time. And then we almost just sort of like cut the segment short in a way that we thought was funny. But do you want to talk about the second part of it and what that was?
The second part was him actually calling and leaving a voicemail on Jasmine, the stripper's voicemail.
It was love at first sight, and he wanted to see her again,
Yeah,
basically.
I like when things derail like comedically, but I don't know
Yeah.
if it was done. I think it could have been done stronger, or it could have been conceptualized a little bit more, but we were crunched and we did what we did, and Mike came through with some great vocals. But I think this actually is good because your first part where you did your second time of trying Pop Rocks,
All right.
I think like that sort of piece would have benefited greatly from like a lot of other people. And we put it out to the community and there just wasn't a response, but that's the sort of piece where you could start off at a really simple or fun, trivial sort of place like Pop Rocks, which is just fun and it sounds great. Like the actual like you can hear the sounds, which was great for radio. But then it could go into much deeper things, like someone maybe they're estranged from someone, and then going to see them for the second time, or I don't know, something a little bit deeper. But we could have like expanded it that way, perhaps.
This American Life does that a lot, where they sort of introduce a really, really deep, complex idea with a very, very small anecdote from someone. So yeah, that would have been interesting to do. But going back to the Almost Sound thing for a second, I kind of wonder what other people felt about that. Because we did hear some people, which is like totally reasonable, being like, why the hell was this in the episode? Like, it was funny, but why? But I kind of liked those parts that we didn't necessarily hold people's hand, because to me, it's sort of, it alluded to this bigger idea, right? Of like missed connections. Like, you see someone and you're like, oh my God, I want to spend the rest of my life with that person. And then you want to see them again. Like, you think, if I just see them one more time, I'll know. Like, it'll put your mind at ease, whether you decide you hate that person or you love that person. But I think it speaks to that second time and how you fantasize about it, and then how often it never happens. So to me, that was sort of the whole thing of it, and whether we portrayed that or whether we kind of had that come across. But I'd just be interested to hear other people's, like, what they thought about that when they heard it, or if they thought about it. Or if they just turned it off at that moment and didn't listen to any other episodes. Whatever, strippers, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
All right, so what's your least favorite segment?
In the guns episode, you talked to your friend about gun bars. Behind the scenes, we sort of learned, like, to add gaps and breaths into these pieces.
Mm.
And I guess sort of like as an overall note, but I kind of wish we had more fun with the recurring science segments in the same way that we, the same treatment of the gun bars bit. I wish that we, and it, you know, it was so fun with Kelly's voice and everything coming in and doing like the vocal, like, that was so fun and that was so good. I don't know. I don't have any like specific ideas of how we could have done it, but I would have liked to maybe see, and this was only upon listening to it for a second time, but maybe some sort of really cool blanket treatment of all the recurring science segments. I think like the future one, that one felt really cool. And like, I think that's what it is. When I listened to the future recurring science segment, I felt really on edge the whole time. And I liked that feeling of it. And I mean, that was sort of the nature of that segment, because we have the Voyager sort of piece interrupted. And so that was what we were driving toward. So I don't know how we could have had a different treatment of them, but I would have liked for those to sort of have their own different sheen in some way and their own kind of specific rhythm. And again, this is all just time. This is, you know, ideally, maybe we had them all produced at one time and then we were able to look at them all. But yeah, I think that what we learned in the gun bar segment could have easily been taken and put into the science segments in some way, because they were really cool.
That's a good point. Yeah, that just got me thinking. Some of those might even lend themselves towards short radio plays, you know, instead of having them be like this sort of informative PSA, have them produced out a little bit. And I think early on, we developed a style with how they were produced. It would have been so much cooler to have that opened up to community more to produce.
Yeah.
Them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Least favorite episode, and how would you have made it better?
Okay. Well, this is also a tough one, so I'll just go right for it. And this is the only reason I say this one, it's not my least favorite episode. I love it. And it got a pretty good response. But school, and I'm going to blame C.W. Lucas for this, but the wonderful C.W. Lucas. No, he's awesome. See, Chris actually lives in a town next door, and he co-hosted the fire episode and was awesome on that. But he made a really great point, and I didn't really see it at the time. But the way I edited school, I think, was too tight. I think things were crammed in too much, and that's not the fault of anyone else. I think that's mainly my fault as like the last minute editor, who is just not leaving those spaces, not leaving those breaths. Perhaps there's a segment or two that we could have omitted from that to let it breathe more. I think it clocked in at 33 minutes, and Joe was great curating that episode. Everything was, I liked the content, and I listened back to it and I'm like, eesh, you gotta just let things settle a little bit. You know, if we had more time, then I think that would have become more apparent before we released it.
Right. That was actually mine, too. I wonder, I mean, we had plenty to work with for every episode. But this one, I feel like we had so, so much to work with. And I think having that overabundance of good things, you have more choices to make. One of the pieces that we had to cut was Pontius Python did this piece where she read a story about her dad. And this was sort of an overwhelming problem that we had in each episode, which was that, and especially with the school episode was very light. There was nothing in there that had a real, depth or real somber feeling to it. And when you have one piece in there like that, it just didn't feel genuine. It didn't sound right. It sounded almost like a parody of the thing that you're trying to make when it's framed by all these sort of comical things. And so I wonder if that sort of speaks to maybe we should have had more deep stuff. I don't really know. I don't really know like what the right solution is, but I think like you said, having some bigger breaths in there and that kind of thing. And it just felt like we had so much stuff that we felt like we needed to fit in. And yeah. I don't know. I almost feel like we should have made more cuts and then looked back at what we started with and said, okay, maybe we should put this back in here and maybe we should.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And we really, I think that was at least a big thing for us, like learning in this was that we had to look at these things as a big whole. Like we wanted you to listen to it and feel like you just had a solid experience instead of like, you know, watching a whole bunch of different little tiny episodes. We wanted to feel like one big episode. And so we had to sort of think of things that contributed to that whole idea. And so there were so many pieces, I feel like, that we cut that sort of just stood on their own, and they really just felt like an outlier in a way that we couldn't make work for the entire episode or for that piece. And so I think with each piece, we wanted it to, be supported by the things that it was around, and then ultimately, like, make a complete episode.
Yeah.
So there were plenty of things that I feel like, I mean, there were so many things that, like, you were a hero for and I was a hero for, and we ultimately had to cut the things that we were super attached to, so.
And this probably echoes exactly what goes on at, HQ with Hit Recording
right.
TV.
Right.
Okay, so.
Oh, shit.
What's next?
What did you want to hear more of on the show, and what did you want to hear less of?
Okay, I could do more really quick music. I think we sort of settled on 30 minutes-ish for the shows. I would love to hear more music just played in full. I think it would allow for more of the things we were talking about, more like breath. I think music is the ultimate palate cleanser. It just kind of, you can just kind of lose yourself in it. You don't have to be following a narrative. You can just be enjoying it. And I don't know if that means longer shows or what that means, but I would love to hear more full-on songs.
Is there anything you'd want to hear less of?
My voice.
I was just about to say that, not your voice, our voices.
Yeah,
at least in the beginning episodes, was a big thing that we learned.
Yeah, and I'd like to, if it was a strong enough like format, the fact that Chrissy came in and the fact that Chris Lucas came in, that didn't feel odd to me. That felt like pretty natural. So I think this could be the sort of show where there's often different hosts.
Right. Mine, and I think this would have to be in a longer show or something. I would like to hear more, I don't know how to say it, like short, weird shit. I think one of my favorite bits was the, was it in Monroe calling his mom? Oh my God, that was so funny. And I love that weird shit where you're just like, you're in a mood of the show and then it just comes. And sometimes that sort of feeling came from the commercials, which were really great.
Right.
And that's what I was going to say was commercials, but I think which the commercials totally succeeded at, but that very short weirdness that you're just like, what the fuck? And by the time you're saying what the fuck, it's over. Like it's gone on to the next thing. And I think, like, I got that feeling with the Future Proof commercial and, like, the Last Domino ending on, like, because, like, kids still have to learn from their mistakes or whatever. Like, I don't know. I just love those weird, weird things. So I would like to have some more brief, strange tangents. And I don't know if that's appropriate. Maybe we put a bunch in and then, like, everyone would be like, I don't know what this is anymore. Maybe it's good that we had a few.
Yeah, it's good to be bold. You're right. I mean, it's good. Like, people aren't dummies, you know?
Right.
So, okay, so less of?
Less of? I guess us, our hosting style, but it really evolved. And at the beginning, we really had these setups where you would ask me a question and I would answer it. And we would introduce a segment, And toward the end, that got a lot looser. And we really sort of got a feel for where the audience may need context or an introduction or just a breath and where they didn't. And I think we got better with the writing, but I'd like to still, you know,
there's still a
lot to learn.
Yeah. It still, to me, like at times feels stiff.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I think the way that we, because when I had initially done re-recs, I would just say a bunch of stuff, had a loose script, and then I would edit it together. And this, we had a fairly tight script. We still ended up taking takes from different parts. And, you know, like even right now, me and you were just kind of relaxed and just sort of talking to each other.
Yeah.
And it didn't really have that to me because of the way that we did it. I think it, you know, a lot of times was really great. And so there were some awesome setups and segue whispering, but I think it can be better. Yeah. Okay. So,
yeah.
So that's that. So let's talk about process. Okay. Curation.
What we did was to sort of get some different perspectives on things, is we sort of reached out to some people who we thought might be interested in this idea and and they were episode curators. So we should name them. For the dark episode, it was no one. It was you. That was like your episode, basically. That's not no one. What I'm saying is it's no one besides the two of us. No, you're no one. And then episode 2 regarding the number 2 was Traden. And episode 3 was Skull. Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that right? That's Joe Red. Episode 4 was Fire. That's CW Locus, who also co-hosted. Episode 5 was Your Mom, which Chrissy was episode curator and she co-hosted. Episode 6 was Guns, which we both curated together.
Yeah.
Episode 7 was Secrets, which I was the primary curator on. And then episode 8 was The Future, which we were both kind of curators on.
And the people that were curators on those episodes that weren't us were heavily involved in the productions as well.
Yeah.
Going into Traden's work on number 2, those two kinds, there are two kinds of people in the world. Like she curated like the beats and she started actually the production on that. Like she started piecing everything together and she came up with all the concepts for that sort of stuff. And then she did we had this public domain song. She took it to the next level. Copying is not theft.
That's really cool.
And same with CW Lucas. He started there was a Fire freestyle something and he kind of resurrected that and pieced it together. And there was, you know, other pieces in there that he really just put a lot of energy into. So he just wasn't just picking stuff. And Joe Rudd voiced a rear end for the end of the school episode amongst like all of his curation and support there.
Yeah. So it just kind of started off with everyone sort of piling in into these Google Docs, like what they thought was good and what could work for the episode and kind of categorizing it. So that kind of goes into our next, like, in general, the way we curated the episode is we had these docs, Google Docs, where we'd put in all this shit, like every possible thing we could think of that we just like regarding the theme. And then we sort of put them into categories of like, okay, this is a song that we could play in full. Okay, this would be a good song that'd be background for something. This song would be good for, just a quick break. We also had the sort of radio play pieces, which obviously needed more production. So those sometimes were just a story. Sometimes they were already fleshed out, that kind of stuff. And then what were the other types of pieces? Some were just, so we kind of just categorized them into what we had and what we were working with. And then what would we do? For the more involved pieces, we would take it.
Reach out.
To the community. Yeah, exactly. We would decide like what the best method was for production. And sometimes that was just reaching out to one specific musician, especially if we only had like, you know, less than a week to get it turned around, to get the piece turned around. We would do that kind of stuff. We tried to do that for poems for each episode so that all poems had the same kind of sounds. Who do we reach out to for various Poetry.
Well, there was for poetry, Madron 101 did all the
Right.
poetry. We were talking about that a little bit, school episode.
For school.
And there was because he did four pieces, and I think only two, we could only fit two on, but he
Right.
did a masterful job on all four. And Joe was a great part of organizing and motivating that. And then Jonathan, Madron 101, came through, and it just they all had a similar vibe.
Right.
For the first episode, we used all of he didn't make any original work for it, but he has such a library of dark sounds. Imkopov, we used all
Yeah.
his a lot of his music for that, and that gave that episode a real character.
And then, of course, there were the bigger segments, like, for example, the league, where we had different voice parts and stuff like that. And again, had we had more time, that would have been awesome to take to the community to do some more, like, on-site production. But we just didn't have that kind of time. So then when we, after we curated it and decided sort of what we were working with in general, we then sort of decided we would put it, put together an outline. And so I guess the most straightforward outline would have been like school, because we tried to start from like the early days of school and kind of evolve into the later days of school. But that kind of took form in different ways. We kind of alternated doing outlines. There was no like strict of like who did what, but it kind of seemed like either you did the outline or I did the outline. When I did outlines, I kind of clustered pieces together that I thought went well together. So I'd take like three or four pieces, be it like, oh, this poem sounds cool after this song, which sounds good before this Japanese folktale. And so that's how I would do it. I'd do little clusters and then just sort of move those little clusters around in an arc that I thought made sense for the episode. What about you?
I struggled with the outlines. That was one of the hardest things for me. I felt really relieved when you did them. But just be well, I didn't I guess I didn't also didn't put too much stock into it, because we would do the outline and then I would have to kind of arrange things and then
Yeah.
become the listener and listen back. And part of mixing is that's like the fun part of mixing, is like when you get it to a point and you get to just like sit back and listen and then kind of reflect on what you feel. So oftentimes it just changed drastically. Things just weren't flowing. So we would have to just kind of fudge stuff around here and there. And that's where a lot of discovery came for me.
Like, I think that's a good way that we both sort of work
Yeah.
together, because you obviously have a better ear for that, and I'm just sort of looking at things as like, oh, the tone of this piece would go well before the tone of this or whatever. And then you'd send me a cut and I'd be like, oh my God, I never thought that that would work there, you know? So there definitely was a lot of back and forth. Absolutely.
A
There
lot of
was no
guess and
outline that
test.
was,
Yeah.
yeah, there was no first draft of an outline that was the last draft of the outline. But it was just sort of like a starting place. So then looking at the outline, we then sort of wrote in the hosting where we thought there needed to be like a full bit, if you will, or where there just needed to be one of us introducing something. And I think our bits, at the beginning, our bits were just sort of in there because they were in there. They were just sort of like, I don't know, let's talk at this part. But I think toward the end, we sort of selected when we had hosting bits based on maybe an aspect of the theme that we didn't think was being represented in the episode, or something that was just personal to us. That was an interesting process, because I think by the end, you were able to write really good hosting for me, like in my voice, and I was able to write good hosting for you in your voice. In general, you know, we always like changed it up a little bit, but
Yeah,
it
'cause
was
we
interesting
had kind of
writing for each other.
developed characters a bit, as
Yeah.
hosts.
Yeah.
Yep, and then final cut slash production slash mixing. A lot of the individual segments, there was like other people that were mixing it, and then a lot of it I did the mixing myself. Like Tinderlock stepped up and like he mixed pretty much all of the fake commercials. There were some that were like pretty much done though by like Conrad stepped up and he would just post, a production of his, with voiceover music he added and just wonderful remixing. But the final mixing was all done at my place, and I would often send a draft to Casey and we would have like a back and forth, maybe one or two times, and then we would put it up.
Put it on up.
And other people like Tinderlocks, and a lot, there was a lot of people that were close to this that we threw things by, like for the Japanese folk tales, like, you know, we'd sometimes send it to Yoshi to see what she thought, or Samurai to see what she thought, just get feedback, or, you know, whoever we were working closely on a segment with. So it was nice to be able to do that. What did we learn?
What did we?
Whole bunch of stuff. I think, yeah, we're still kind of, we're at a pretty decent distance from it now, so we'll do our best to just kind of go through some things. Casey wrote out a bunch of these, and I added a few here. So I'll just start off with the first one, Casey. This is establishing an episode tone. We kind of talked about that earlier. I think it was successful when we did that, and often music is the easiest way to do that, but also the writing of the hosting and what we choose in our segments can be really helpful there. Paying attention to upbeat versus chill vibes and balancing them. I think, yeah, you really, if you're talking about half an hour, you got to really kind of factor in when people need to be motivated and when their attention needs to be grasped and when they need to take a brain break. You know, if you just gave a really heavy segment to them, it might not be best to go back into more intellectual stuff, or stuff that's heavy on dialogue, or you know, just people's grabbing people's attention too much. Avoiding redundant sentiments. That's a really good one. Do you have any examples or anything to say on that one, Casey?
I can't for the life of me think of specific examples, but I think for each episode we sort of would have two. Oh, I know. For the future episode, we had fading futures, and we had the last domino piece. What was that piece called?
It was written by Kubi,
Yeah.
and it's Retro You.
Yes, Retro You. So we had Retro You, and we had fading futures. And we felt like they both kind of spoke to the same thing. It was sort of this, sort of a little bit like a downtrodden narrator, like speaking of a sort of dystopian future. And they were both really good and very different in the style of them, but they had the same sentiment. And so when it came time to cut one or the other, we just had to decide which one fit better in the episode. In that case, for this one, we decided on Fading Futures. So there were a lot of pieces like that, I feel like, that spoke to the same idea or the same
Same vibe,
perspective.
yeah.
Yeah. And so I think with each new segment, we tried to introduce at least like a different perspective on something. And if two pieces, even though they were both tens, didn't, we just, we had to make a decision to have one or the other. So that was just one specific example, but I'm pretty sure each episode had at least one or two of those situations where we had to decide, okay, which one is the best version of whatever this thing is.
I mean, we were trying to make a variety show.
A variety show.
Yeah. So you want to go on to the next one?
Yeah. So we started doing, which we've already spoken to as well, is journalistic segments and how, like, kind of doing these long form journalism pieces, like the piece with Lottie, and hearing voices. Also, that piece that you did, Evan, in the Secrets episode. And I think those were both really successful in their own right, and I'd like to do more of those. But that was really interesting learning when, when we should come in as a host. And for me, and I'd like to hear like your approach to it too. But so Lottie, kind of, I asked her to just sort of tell her story, the same thing that she had written in the text record on the site, and so she sent me, it was like 12 minutes of audio. So I just sort of went through and kind of picked out the beats of the story that needed to be hit, to really tell her story. And then I picked the parts that would be easily summarized by me, the facts. Like, I think that's sort of what I tried to pick out were the facts, and then had her sort of fill in the really, really important stuff, that really she could only tell, that were from her perspective.
Yeah.
What was your approach to the hearing voices piece, and how do you decided to come in on hosting or and that kind of thing?
The big part is the vibe of the music. You know, that's nothing really new, I guess. But I think,
Oh, yeah?
I think therefore I am. So, like, that's all I got. That's all I. That's all I got. Long form journalism. Yeah, I love
Done.
the idea of checking back in. Yeah, this is where I wanted to go. I think the idea of doing testimonials can feel kind of flat as far as like it can only go so far because people are just speaking towards, maybe they're telling one story or they're, telling one opinion on something. But I think the way that we live and the way that we are in real life, it's like constantly changing, and like to have pieces that are more involved with our journalism and like checking back in, like even what's going on right now on site with Scorch and everyone else who's doing the Impossible Dream, Katie and Buttercup, we're checking. There's more of an ongoing narrative, so to incorporate that, temporally to get have it like over a long period of time would be sweet. But we did this in 4 months, and we did the actual, a lot of these things were done in a matter of days. So that would just take more consideration and planning.
And I think getting some more perspectives in there, like how I really wanted to in the Pop Rocks piece before we decided it was actually going to go on the show. I would have liked to maybe like talk to my dad or my brother to see if they remember that initial my initial experience with Pop Rocks. You know, just having an extra voice in there of someone I think is helpful. And then, you know, I do wonder though, like how we can still make that hit recordy, because then it's just kind of getting into like a journalism piece, which is fine. Like there's nothing wrong with that.
That's true. That's
But I
true.
do wonder like how we can experiment, because that, you know, that's a very basic, like audio journalism is you know, you hear the base of the story and then you hear essentially like the equivalent of like eyewitnesses, you know, that you would see on a news story on TV or something like that. So, it'd be fun to maybe explore different ways that we can really maybe like shake that up a little bit. Okay, so in general, our roles as hosts, which we've talked about a lot already, I don't know if we need to talk about that anymore, but I guess I would like to hear what people thought of our hosting in general.
Yeah, give it to us.
If they were annoyed by us, if they.
Do it. We're
As
not
annoyed by our,
sensitive. Yeah.
we're already annoyed by ourselves.
Yeah.
Maybe some episodes where it was successful and where it wasn't, because that I think that we didn't put enough attention on sort of our own purpose in the episodes until about 3 or 4 episodes in, and then we were like, okay, this is what we're here for, you know?
Or yeah, I mean, if someone wants to flip it completely, if they have a whole different concept of how hosting could be done, so yeah, let us know, guys. Artist intros, yeah. So we did this quite a bit with the new music that was being created for the podcast. They
For the
can
like vinyl record project,
for the
yeah.
vinyl record project, right? They can add perspective and lead the ear into the right place. We wrote down here. These could have been whole shows. Yeah, I agree. We got a lot of great insight from Adam, Homunculus, for the school episode for Old School, but we didn't have space to include it all. I agree that there could be, this could be more in depth. They could be, much like the community profiles, it could be like more of just like a spotlight on the artist mixed with their music. There's all sorts of ways you can do that. Worked
Yeah.
well for the Sugar Network too. Yeah, I liked. I think, we're kind of like lifting the curtain on a lot of this stuff in a really cool way. So to hear that Joe Rudd had actually been part of this Sugar Network, and that's a record that he had contributed way back when the collaboration first started, and then Dayglo wrote the script, and then here we are, and it's, being scored by Ozzy, and there's this great, the community's coming through on the voiceover acting, and you had whipped it all up and organized it, Casey, and rewrote things for radio. That was great to have him just kind of kick things off, It felt
Yeah,
like,
and I think it really grounded it. I
yeah.
think it grounded the piece in a whole new way for sure. It might be kind of cool just in general. Like I would love to hear people's like processes with things, and I don't know like if there's a way to do that for visual artists or even like writers or anything like that. But it is kind of interesting having like the equivalent of like you know having an audio diary maybe of a certain project. I think this would be really cool for the Impossible Dream collab. Especially kind of like talk people talking about, you know, every day how they're feeling about, you know, Scorch talking about her weight loss, or Katie talking about her progress with tap dancing, or Buttercup talking about her preparations to travel. It's just a really easy way. And I feel like without the camera, at least I'm really self-conscious in front of a camera, you're just sort of like, oh, I didn't know I did that weird thing with my arms or whatever the situation is. And so by taking that little bit away from it, I think you kind of cut to the core a little bit. So I think that's part of the reason. I loved all the intros. I love Jersey's intro to her piece too. It just kind of adds an extra perspective to this person whose art you already know. This kind of goes in, our next part kind of goes into hosting too. We had a lot of trouble with, we would record all of our hosting at one time. We would write all the different bits that we had to do, the different introductions we had to do. And then we would get on a Google Hangout, Evan and I, or Chrissy and I did it for the mom episode. And you and Chris were actually in the same room together, since you live so close to one another, when you hosted the fire episode. But we would record all those bits and then probably use half of them because there were pieces that we thought needed introductions. And they were like, you know, this doesn't really need an introduction. And then inevitably there'd be a piece that did need an introduction. So I don't know, that was just like another thing that we learned of deciding when we needed to sort of lend people's ear, like walk them into the piece, and when it was more beneficial that they just kind of fall into the piece.
Like after we did this, I went to, there was this podcast event that was called Cast Party, and it was broadcast live to theaters. And Invisibilia, which is an NPR show that's gotten some prominence over the past couple of years, like the way she did it is she has her script, and she has all of her content triggered. She has it set up, you know, to these triggers on her iPad, and she was just doing her spiel, and then she would just hit the trigger when she got to that point, and it would either cue, you know, a musical cue, a sound effect, or an interview, or whatever it might be. And so then she was able to kind of, it was sort of a performance that was, it was timed, and so all in one long piece, or all like in real time, she was doing it, which is a lot less labor intensive as far as cutting up everything that we do in our big hosting block and then placing it into the piece, and then finding out, oh, we need more space. Like, and then I start inevitably fudging with the timing of everything. You know what I mean? It just,
yeah. Well, I think we wanted it to feel natural, but I think there's also something to be said for the difference between, I'm trying to think of like a comparison. But, you know, if you go to watch like a live variety show or a live show, like the host is like saying lines, and there is like a certain fun to that, you know?
Yeah.
So I can definitely appreciate the invisibility approach. It's just like, it was very interesting to kind of go back and forth between those. And for the future episode, we just really kind of ditched it all together intentionally, and just a little bit more honest with it, and just kind of wrangled and said and said whatever we kind of wanted to say.
Yeah, that was fun. It was cathartic.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it was just sort of like we definitely discovered our intention in different episodes and whether we had to just...
What are you doing to your microphone?
Set it up. Am I doing something?
It's getting all scruffy. Are you moving it?
No, it's just sitting here.
Okay.
Oh, my God. Have I been recording in my computer? Oh, no. Maybe I've been recording in my computer for you. Because I was just rubbing where the mic is on my computer.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. My system preferences says I'm using my mic.
Sys prefs. All right. So where are we?
Okay. So the last two things are just talking about teams.
Okay. Teams. I was messaging with Tinderlocks afterwards. He's like, yeah, small efficient teams came about and people just got shit done. From the start, there was, you know, Japanese Folktales was formed because of Yoshi stepping up and Samurai stepping up and Humberflube stepping up and like really getting the writing into a good place, and organizing it really. I mean, there was quite a few other people who stepped up in that process as well. Exofer was huge. He did all the scores for Japanese folktales. If people didn't know that, I hope they do. But he really gave character to these pieces in a really wonderful way. Composition, there were certain people that, between myself and Casey and others that we were reaching out to, Luxie really helped out with a lot of the music for The Dark, and some other episodes as well. And Griff, whose name on hit record is Doorstopper, he did Banana Sandwich's score, and Sugar Network, Ozzy did that. And like we said before, Madron did poetry for, he did the music for Your Mom. But these were people that we were reaching out to, and they were just coming with it. Let's see. Sound designers, a lot of like the intense sound design was done by Tinderlox and Soundtrack Sean. I did quite a bit myself too. But these are guys who I could kind of send a message to, and within a few days, they would sometimes have something back to me. And that was like, I don't know what I would have done without it. And thank you, a big thank you, obviously, to everyone like was involved. But
Yes.
it's just kind of nutty that it all came together. And
And Kelly did the Humbra, the science segment even.
Kelly, Ivy Kelly Morris, I don't know, it was like 6 minutes or whatever, or just going off on different loops regarding science. It was just pure gold
Yeah.
to sample
And
from.
Humbra Flute, so Humbra Flute curated the recordings. So for both recurring science and Japanese folktales, there was a selection for each episode. Every episode had a recurring science segment. Every episode had a Japanese folktale. But not all of them were included in the final cut, for the same reasons that not everything was included on all the final cuts. But Humbra Flute actually went through and worked with different writers on different drafts of things and helped to curate for sure all the different the voiceovers that he thought were working and that kind of thing. So that was a very intense process. So that was really cool. Oh, one other thing that we did during this process, which I totally forgot, was the writer's room for the manifesto.
Yeah,
And I
that's
would have
huge.
loved to have had the time to do that for more stuff. But that was like a really cool thing that happened.
Yeah, because there's like, every time we put up the manifesto at the beginning of the episode, there's, I think there's, I don't know, 20 something writers credited to that. So it was just a lot of different people chipping away, at that piece, which was really nice. Okay, HROYR as content development stepping stone. Yeah, so this is more, like next step, or just like looking at what this actually could be to the community. In this case, there's a vinyl record being made out of the songs that were produced or further produced for this podcast. And what we aired oftentimes was not a finished song. So it's just like it's a great opportunity to like, this was still a production and a presentation, so it just kind of, it could be something, hit record on the radio or whatever podcast we have could be something that is the stepping stone to the next thing, if it is a vinyl record or whatever it might be. So there's been a lot of people suggesting different things of where we could go from here. And having this work with the school initiative, HR in classrooms, so hit record on your radio, school edition, school on the radio, whatever that might look like to students, getting them involved. That was something that Jersey Jung brought up. I think that could be wonderful. Campfire stories to play into the National Parks collab was something that Pontius Python brought up. I also think that's sounds like a lot of fun. The Impossible Dream collab. There's, Andy Ramone in his record just said whatever's really going on. You could kind of, if it was a reoccurring show, like a monthly show or whatever it might be, you could help it. You could help whatever projects are going on at the time and showcase things on HR on your radio.
I think there's, at least for me, like there's just a different kind of level of intimacy, but also convenience to audio that I really like. I'm often, you know, walking somewhere or doing something, and so I'm able to listen to that, to things, and I don't often have time to just kind of like sit down and watch something. Even like I sort of make time and save tabs of like videos that I want to watch on hit record and stuff like that. So it is, it offers sort of like a different level of intimacy, and it's been really fun exploring the potential of audio, which I mean has already been fully discovered by all these people who've been doing podcasts for like a billion years. But this being our first time around, I think that there is an intimacy and sort of like a vulnerability and a different kind of, it's a different kind of audience, I think. Not necessarily a different kind of person at all. That's not what I mean. I just mean you're in a different mindset whenever you're listening to something as opposed to when you're sitting down to watch it. I'd love to hear how people preferred to listen to the podcast, because some people said they just like, you know, they would just sit down and listen to it. I like to listen to it or anything whenever I'm kind of like on a walk when I'm actively doing something, but not something that's completely taking my attention. So I'd like to sort of play with that idea too, and seeing like, I think that could kind of inform further projects as well, seeing how people already listen to the podcast or podcasts in general.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the pacing of it. I'm sort of a slower person in a lot of ways, in the sense of like, I just like slowing things down. And I think the podcast really lends itself towards, like you said, you can do other things. You know, a lot of artists will just have shouted this out and said, oh, it's great to put on while I'm doing my drawing, or like when you're doing your cooking or something like that. You can still be social and still have it going and still feel connected to it.
Mm-hmm. I think hit record on your radio is a good model for other projects that we could take on in the community that we haven't really tapped into yet. There's a lot of potential there that we haven't tapped into. And the best part is you can wear your pajamas while you're doing it.
You could totally do that. I would never know.
I'm not wearing pajamas right now.
I kind of always wear pajamas. So I just want to say thank you everyone for listening and participating in Hit Record on Your Radio. This is just Casey and my debriefing because we were so involved in putting it together. But it kind of turned into everyone's thing. And that was the idea. And I think it's a big mirror that reflects back into the community. There's a lot of pieces on Hit Record on Your Radio that we didn't do much of anything to, which I thought was really beautiful. I think we have the capability of making some really high quality shit. And I'd love to see more initiatives like this to share that more readily and more frequently. And I think it only makes our community more vibrant and happy.
Yeah. I feel like I should say a thing now. I don't have a thing.
You don't have to say a thing.